All right, hey guys, we are back, and even though St. Patrick's Day is still a little over a year off, we are not talking about anything Irish, but instead we are talking about Canon, one of the two big camera manufacturers to come out of Japan, chief rival to my good friend Nikon, and a camera system that I've had cameras come into my collection. I shoot, and then they very quickly go out of my collection. But that is perfectly all right, because we have two men here who are awash in Canon products. So let's take it away.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Well, let's start right at the top of the line, and we are talking about the Canon F1, chief rival to the Nikon F2.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I'm technically a Nikon guy too, but I have a lot of Canon. I'm trying to figure out why, but they are great cameras. I have not one, not two, but three F1s with me today. I've got the original one that was introduced in 1971 when the F2 came out. It is a tank of a camera.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's depleted uranium weight. It takes one, I believe, 625 battery, if memory serves correct. And it's got a really nice sounding shutter. It goes up to 1/2000th of a second. And it takes the ubiquitous Canon FD mount, which can be found cheaply in the used market. They made this camera up until about 1975, and then they did a little tinkering with it, and they called it the Canon F1 lowercase n. The big difference is the film advanced throw is nowhere near as long as the original. They made that up until about 1980, 1981, and then they replaced it with another camera, their pro body. They'll call it the Canon F1N large case N. Now, there are differences between the two, because they're really the Canon F1N from the 1980s takes a 6-volt silver oxide battery, just like the A series cameras.
Okay.
And it's unlike the original F1, which is entirely mechanical with just a meter. This one is a hybrid shutter, so everything above 1/60th of a second is mechanical. Everything below is electronic.
Interesting.
Like the EF.
Yes, and I have one of those with me today as well, but I don't think we have time to talk about it at this point. The F1Ns are real beautiful cameras. Like, I have one that's the what's called the AE prism head, which kind of at a distance you think, my God, that kind of looks like an Nikon F3. But no, it's an F1N. And the other one is the eye level prism. Again, the metering is the same. To my understanding, way Canon thought with the AE prism, if you had the motor drive, you can get aperture priority as well. Don't ask me how it works, because I don't use aperture priority. I just manual focus it all. With these particular models, they're not the N1N, the Canon F1Ns, again, large case, and they tend to run more expensive. You're looking around to anywhere between 250 to maybe, I want to say, $400.
I've seen them really go up there, like 400, that 200, 400. That's a good price.
But yeah,
I've seen them go 400, 500.
That's with the AE prism head.
Yeah.
They're a little less common than the eye level prism. The metering is great on them.
I've shot with the original F1, and it's a tank of a camera, absolutely beautiful, really easy to use, and being fully mechanical, you don't need to worry about battery.
No. And it was basically the, I think, the first Canon system camera where you had the detachable prism heads. They're a little, but they were way behind Nikon in that regard.
Yeah. Even still, I mean, it took Nikon releasing the F2 for Canon to step into the professional SLR game.
That's correct.
Yeah.
They up until around 1970, they were basically focused on the consumer market. Like,
okay,
maybe the odd photojournalist be messing around with a Canon 7 rangefinder.
Right.
But I think majority of them, it was, they were focused to the consumer market. But I think around 1970, they really wanted a slice of the professional market. And it's kind of funny with the sort of design philosophy that Canon went with, especially with their electronic cameras, where they focused on shutter priority. They appealed more to sports photographers.
Yeah, definitely.
Whereas the Nikon F2s, F3s tended to focus a little more towards
photojournalists,
and I guess you could say fashion.
Yeah,
I found the Nikons use the short focal lengths, and then Canon usually went with the 200 to 400 mil focal lengths with their L series lenses and all their fancy gear. But it just seemed, just any time I've ever seen Canon, I always see long lens. I see Nikon short lens, like 50, 28. The typical photojournalist kind of look.
No, and also I find it hilarious that it's just, they've just kept the F1 name and they've just tacked a letter on, where Nikon went F, F2, F3, F4, F5.
Maybe a less imaginative marketing department.
or they just wanted people to go, oh, right, F1, that's their professional camera. They'd done the same with the EOS 1, which replaced the F1. Just completely and totally radical difference, where Nikon was more of a phase up. This was like a clear delineation.
Yeah, there's always, with Canon, there's always been just a clear-cut line. Yeah. Like, you had their professional line, and then you had like their mixed prosumer, and then you had their pretty obviously consumer line.
And the camera you have, Mike, is consumer.
It's classified as a semi-pro. Now, I've actually got two models here. I've got my Canon A2 and the predecessor, the A1. Now, the funny thing is, if we look at the A1, just a quick little glance through, it's basically the exact reciprocal, or, well, exact duplicate, but using FD mount, as the A2. It was not an AE1, and it was not an AE1 program, but it was also not a pro camera like the F1. It was the mid-market, prosumer, advanced amateur, but you could also easily use it in the pro line. I mean, you can get the motor drive for it, as this one has Dateback's dedicated flash, like the 199A, which is a fantastic strobe on it. And of course has PC port, and it does have a lot of different accessories you can get. Obviously the F1, as Bill would happily mention about, was the is the massive magazine back, but Nikon also had that as well.
Yeah.
Now, if we go fast forward in time, we've got the Canon A2. Now, this one was not a EOS 1, so it's not the prime model, but it's not a Rebel either. No. So, like, this thing was, for its day, it was a fantastic camera. Now, eventually the A2 turned in, which was also the EOS 5, turned into the Canon EOS 3. Let's fast forward now into the digital era. We're looking at the EOS 5D, so the prosumer full-frame DSLRs.
Nice.
The one thing that it's kind of odd that it has is a pop-up flash. But then again, if I remember correctly, does the 5D not have a pop-up flash?
Yeah, we don't care about that.
Either way, it was kind of odd having the pop-up flash on this. I mean, it kind of made it more like almost like it is like they trying to sell it to the advanced amateur, but at the same time, the pros see pop-up flash a lot of time, they'll shy away from it because then it comes out as too consumerish. Like, honestly, it's got the wheel at the back, which you'll see on basically most modern DSLRs today.
And most of the EOS cameras that Canon put out, I've shot with the A2 also, and just, it's an absolutely joy to shoot with.
Yeah.
And it's not as highly sought after. So
it's cheap as chips. I mean, my friend Ori, he picked up basically what I'm holding in my hand, which is the A2 with a 50-1.8-2, which is the absolute rubbish 50 mil, because, well, it's really, really dirt cheap. It even feels cheap.
$100, but it's a sharp lens.
Oh, fantastic lens. But here's the thing. This is the kicker. He paid $5 for an A2E with a 50 mil lens. So it basically turns it into a camera that he doesn't care about. He'll take it out. He loves it. But if it's one of those that it's, oh, crap, it slipped and fell and smashed into a million pieces, big deal. He paid $5 for a camera, and he's already easily put through 10, 15 rolls of film through it just because it's that type of camera. You pick it up, you want to shoot it. It is super light in hand. You really don't notice the weight until you start adding on the longer lenses or the L-series low dispersion glass. That's when you start getting the big elements, heavy glass, and suddenly the balance becomes wrong. And that's when you realize that it is a prosumer camera meant to use their non-L-series lenses. And it becomes pretty obvious that if you're going to start shooting with the L lenses and the longer lengths, that you really want to go with the EOS One. Definitely. Just for the better balance.
Now, jumping back to manual focus, this is the camera that I recently borrowed from Bill and absolutely fell in love with. It's the Canon FTB. John also has one, so what do you have to say about it?
Okay, I have a bit of a checkered history with Canon. I've had two A1s, sold them both. I've had an AE1, gave it to my daughter's arts high school because, bless their hearts, they still have a film photography program.
Yay.
In this day and age. I've had a Canon 7 rangefinder, which died, and I had a Canon P rangefinder, which another person at the table is now enjoying and getting a lot more use out of it than I ever did. So I, like the FTB, I got this camera free, so it's hard to complain. I have not shot it yet, I'll be honest. I was going to shoot it today, but the weather had other ideas.
It sucked,
yes. The initial impression so far, love the feel, very clean. I love the QL mechanism for loading film. You just basically put it in like a little clamp thing that goes down, and it's gorgeous. I'm surprised that that no one else, like once we got to the auto wind, you know.
Yeah, everyone
did it, but in the day of the manual wind, I'm sort of surprised that no one else copied them. So I'm looking forward to shooting the first roll with this, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of quick load, this is the really odd thing: is you got the FTB, which I think was the last of the quick load models, then Canon for some odd reason completely dropped the quick load and went back to the standard, feed it into a slot and hope it grabs. And there's been countless times where I've thought I did, and I think we've all done that, and it slips out. Mm-hmm. But I didn't understand, why did they go with the quick load on the FTB, which was a stripped down model of the F1 for all intents and purposes.
Yep.
And the F1 did not have a quick load. It boggled the mind why the FTB was the last of the quick loads, and they just scrapped it all together. And
yeah. Didn't the Canon QL series had a quick load?
They had, that's the whole QL, was the quick load.
Yeah.
Canon had it all the way up, except for, their Canon 28. They had the crap version of the 28, and then they had the better version, which was, it added a rangefinder. And instead of using a selenium cell for the meter, it uses a battery. So I've got a 28, and they're decent cameras, but I looked at it this way. I said, I'll never use it. I use my QL25 if I'm going to use a Canon at the rangefinder. So I gave it to my son, and he's actually done some really good work with it. I'm really impressed.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that I've noticed with John's FTB, he's got the hot shoe cover. I've never seen a camera today from that vintage with a hot shoe cover, ever. Yeah.
Maybe it's worth more than the camera. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well,
it's Canon.
Oh,
again,
them's fighting words.
Like John, I learned on Canon with an AE1. I sold it to get, when my dad passed 12 years ago, he had a Nikon F, a Leica M3. So I was building my Nikon fleet. So the AE1 had to go. But 6 years later, a friend of mine gifted me an FTB with some lenses. And that's how I got pulled back into FD. Then I grabbed a second FTB off eBay. The shipping was worth more than the camera.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
It's just hilarious because these cameras are built to last.
They are.
And they're actually great to shoot with. Like, it just boggles my mind. You can get one today. If you shop right, you can probably even find a black one from Japan for about, I don't know, with shipping, to your door, $70.
Yeah.
Hard to beat that.
And I mean, when it comes to the FTB, again, I've shot a single roll through it, and I am a Nikon guy, but if I had gone with Canon, I would have an FTB in my collection. And if I had the room and the funds, I would get an FTB with a short telly, a 50, and a wide angle, just to have, because it's a great camera to teach people on, to get them going, because it's match needle. The quick load system is an absolute godsend when it comes to loading 35mm film, because you don't have to think about it. Again, I'm really surprised that they didn't put it on the F1s, because you shoot that roll of 36, you rewind it, you pull it out, you don't have to think, you just bam, in, done, wind, click, and you're going.
Yeah, that's why I said I don't understand why they got rid of the quick load system for the F1.
Maybe it just cost too much to manufacture. Who knows?
That's probably it. Also,
that is probably a key point.
The other challenge that I find with the FTB quick load system, if you do your own, some of your own maintenance, as in reseal the camera, it can be a bit of a pain to get around that. You've got to unscrew, take out some screws. You got to make sure you don't lose those screws.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can see why they probably said, okay, we've had enough of this. Let's just go like everyone else.
Yeah. I never really, it's really unfortunate. I never really got into the FTB, but, I'm definitely on the same boat. They are really, really good cameras to shoot. I shot a roll of, it was from the FPP. It's one of their rapid copy process slide film, whatever you want to call it. So it had a really low ISO, but it feels different when you're out there with the FTB. I don't know why. Like, I've shot so many different Canons, but the FTB, it feels good in the hand. But with me, it always got overshadowed by the Spotmatic. It's just how things happen. I don't know. It's sad.
We'd probably be remiss in covering the Canon if we didn't talk about the famous squeal.
The A-series squeal.
And so I want to recommend, if you go back into the vault, in our first season, we had an episode, I forget which one it was.
About repairing the
do-it-yourself. Yeah, repairing cameras. Yeah.
And so Mike did a step-by-step on how to easily de-squeal your Canon. So if you have an AE-1 and it squeals like a pig, there is hope.
Yeah, well, whether it's an AE-1, AE-1 program, or A1, it's very, very simple fix. And from that day back in, oh, geez, what season are we in? Three now?
We're in season three.
Which is unbelievable. So about 3 years ago, when I did the Canon AE-1 program repair, I'm still using that camera today. The squeal has not returned, and it's like the darn camera's brand new again, and it's great. It's a really, really simple fix. Yeah, no.
But it's just such an iconic noise.
Yeah. I had it with my A1 as well. Same sort of noise. Now on the A1, it was really bad. I mean, it was really bad to the point where I tripped the shutter, and it would probably be a good second for the mirror to come up, but then the shutter would fire for perfect. And then another about a second for the mirror to go down. It was really, really bad, but on the AE-1 program, in a lot of ways, other than the fact that it was made for good step-by-step on our repair episode, I kind of didn't want to fix it because it's such an iconic sound for the A-series camera.
Definitely. No, well, that covers it for this episode. My name's Alex Lokes, and I say the only Canon I like to shoot is a 6-pounder.
This is John Meadows, and I may be a Nikon guy, but I'll admit, Canon cameras are high caliber.
This is Donna Pataxi, and if you haven't been out there to shoot, get out there and do it.
This is Mike Pataxi. I am a Canon guy, but for some reason, I end up a Pentax first.
I'm Bill Smith. I like to say I'm a Nikon guy, but for some reason, I have a lot of Canon FD mount cameras in my collection.
Beautiful.
I'm James Lee, and my only Canon...
belongs to you.